Welcome to the inaugural show zero of the Babylon Podcast. My name is Summer Brooks.
I'm going to put that on and go into the spot factory and get to work.
My dog and I are being attacked by a duck.
I think I'm kidding, but I'm not.
When you're hungry, you're hungry.
The Virgin sits on a crate, opening and closing his pipe.
Steph has a mind of its own tonight.
I didn't get any entries at all.
Telepaths against mundanes is no contest.
I like Day of the Dead.
I did too.
Hey guys, it's Gary. I'm listening to episode 1.
And God help us all, this is Joe Truman.
Production of the malt liquor beverage Zima.
Nice and close, and I looked at him and I go, you are.
Hey there. Okay, I'm... Actually, let me call you back in a minute. Bye.
Stella, I knew it was a bad idea to record. I knew it was.
Welcome to the Babylon Podcast. I am Tim Callender.
I'm Brett Filipek.
And I am Gary from Jacksonville.
Yay! Hello, Gary.
Yay! Thanks, hey. Gary, for filling in for being our summer tonight.
I'll be the summer, fall, winter, spring. It doesn't matter.
Don't get my letters like a butterfly.
If you start singing, I'm out of here. I want to let you know. Yeah.
Is that all it took? And then I can take your spot. Love.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. You know, what was that song? You are the sun, I am the moon, play me. Yeah, if we start going there, I'm out.
Yeah, and why is he talking to the chair anyways? That's what I wanted to know.
Right?
Or the chair. Yeah. They think Jimi Hendrix was on some drugs. They should listen to some Neil Diamond. Hey, Summer's not with us tonight. She is, there's a lot going on in Summer's life, and not to delve into all that kind of stuff, but if any of our listeners want to drop a note to Summer at sliceofscifi.com and just say, hang in there, Summer, we love you, I think that would be marvelous.
Oh, any words of encouragement? She's going through a rough patch right now. She'd sure appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. On a little brighter note, this is a bright note. Babylon Podcast was nominated yet again for a Parsec Award for best fan news specific genre category or something. I don't know, Gary.
I'm one of the members of the Parsec steering committee, and I'll have to say I did recuse myself from any votes concerning the show because I want you to win on your own merits, because I think the show deserves it, but I couldn't step in and vote much as I wanted to. But the category is for discussing a specific show, movie, something of that nature, like a Firefly or a Buffy the Vampire Slayer, or in our case, Babylon 5, as opposed to discussing several things like Slice does.
Right.
So have we never won before?
No, you've been nominated to the finals a few times already, but you've never taken home the prize.
I'd like to think that if it happens, it's because of me.
Well, you know what, Brett? That's a better theory than what I was going to offer up.
I'm ready for yours.
Yeah, well, my theory involves two parts. Number one, our production values have improved since the show began, if only because now I'm on Fios as opposed to the landline. And number two, in the year that for the 2010 award, for the time span in consideration, we had interviews with Jerry Doyle and Joe Michael Straczynski. So those are some heavy hitters, and I'm hoping that'll help us bring home the bacon.
I'm still going to go with all being on me. I want you to know that.
No, that's fine. And I'm sure we'll get all kinds of emails and voicemails.
Well, that's okay, because I'm hosting and I'm taking home the trophy if you get it.
There you go. Wow, look at that.
Well, I know I won't be able to.
I'll forward it on, but I'll accept in this show's honor if you guys, should you guys win.
Absolutely. When we win. Come on now.
It's a win. I'm going with win on this.
I have to be impartial, Tim.
I know. I'm not asking you to do anything more than buy off some judges. One last other little bit of news. This is from the JMS world of things. I was looking at some stuff in
Lensman.
No. You know what? I've kind of sighed and shrugged my shoulders, and you know that'll come down the hyperspatial tube when it does. No, this is the sales numbers for JMS first full issue of Wonder Woman. This actually comes off his Facebook posting, and it says, "We've gotten the sales figures on my first full Wonder Woman issue, and DC is very, very happy. The first issue came in at number 38 on the top 100. The regular book in the 4 months prior to the anniversary issue had come in at 71, 85, 78, and 82. So we jumped from the lowest point or nearly halfway up to top 100 rankings. So, be interesting to see how long that lasts. That's not necessarily a reflection of JMS's work, but, you know, everybody's had a lot of buzz about that. So,
buzz is good.
Yep, absolutely.
Speaking of J. Yep. Michael Straczynski, you know something funny? I'm completely unrelated to the Babylon podcast, but related to J. Michael Straczynski. I was actually watching the movie Changeling.
Yes.
I had no idea he wrote that.
Did you catch the line?
What's that?
Did you catch the line?
Which line?
In Changeling, which line from Babylon 5 was it? Oh, never start a fight, I think it was, but always
finish
it. Yes,
I did, as a matter of fact. I do remember that, seeing that. But at the time, what I thought was funny was I didn't know he wrote the movie. While I was watching the movie, I didn't see it until the very end when it says written by J. Michael Straczynski. Then I'm like, it occurred to me, you're right, that he'd put that line in there. But my God, that movie was brilliantly written. This guy's a genius. I'm just telling you, a genius.
Well, if you didn't know anything about it, he actually wrote that. That was written actually before Babylon 5. That's how long he was shopping that movie.
Wow. Yeah. No kidding. That's
bizarre. I think it was Jerry Doyle mentioned something about it, that, you know, he was talking about it, you know, back in the early 90s, because he had gotten it when he was a reporter in Los Angeles, found the dead case files, and had, you know, researched it and written it up. And that's how long it took him to sell it. You know, overnight success, 20 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Wow. Although, to be fair, you know, he had a couple things in between there to
tried him over.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that was I'll tell you, I'm not a huge Angelina Jolie fan, but that was a fantastic movie. I would highly recommend it to people who have not seen it.
All right,
I'm sure Jay would love the kudos.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you what, guys, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break and then come back and jump into some voicemail.
Beautiful.
Bring it on.
I'm Michael R. Menengate.
I'm Summer Brooks.
I'm Michael Stackpole.
And I'm Brian Brown.
Join us for an exciting romp through literature and books.
Romp?
We're not romping.
We're supposed to be cool.
That's smooth. Right. Okay. It's the cool.
It's the sounds. Smoothing sounds.
The smoothing sounds.
I don't know, but romp just brings forth images of Michael in tights, and I'm so not going there.
Well, which Michael?
It doesn't matter. Neither one would be very good.
If you would like to join this thing that we do every week, it's called Dragon Page, cover to cover.
Take two. Welcome to Dragon Page, cover to cover, where the elite meet to discuss literature.
Okay, let's go back to the tight images. Yeah.
Dragon Page, cover to cover, where you'll never know what you're going to get next.
Okay, we are back, and we're ready to jump into some voicemail. Now, let me just preface this by saying I'm not even going to call this feedback a palooza, because we've got so much voicemail and feedback that we're going to start getting through. I think when the next bunch of shows might be feedback shows, but the reason I say it's not feedback a palooza, I would almost say listener dialogue, because these shows that we've done here recently on the general topics like religion and law and justice and surprises and all the rest have really generated a lot of feedback. And I kind of want to get as many voices in on this as we can. So to that point, Mike, run the first one.
Hey, Babcasters, it's Arkel, listening to the last show. Well, Tim, since the light's being practiced, let me just go ahead and pile on there. It's actually pronounced Foucault, as in Foucault's pendulum. Yes, I know how it's spelled, but, you know, it's French. What can you do? Yeah, and of course, I only know that because I took a class in college where Foucault came up. And he's actually one of my favorite philosophers, I think. Yes, I have favorite philosophers. I am that much of a geek. Talk to you later, Babcasters. Bye.
Well, let it never be said that I don't allow anybody to pile on.
That's very magnanimous of you.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And go ahead.
Although I was going to sit there and say, really? He sits there and wants to throw out things like, I have my favorite philosophers, and he thinks he's not going to get a ration of crap for that? Yeah.
Well, you want to talk about favorite philosophers? Immanuel Kant was a real peasant who was very rarely stable. I digger was a boozy beggar who could drink you under the table. Oh, God, I messed up the words.
Did we start the musical episode and I didn't notice?
Yeah.
I'm not going to call that music.
It's the Bruce's Philosopher song. Come on now, guys. Oh, well, never mind. Mike, next one, quick.
Hey, guys, it's Brian in New York. Hey, just wanted to leave a comment on Podcast 206, Surprises. My biggest surprise for Babylon 5 had to be that I felt that there was stuff going on behind the scenes. When you watch an episode, you always felt like there was stuff going on outside of what the main characters were doing. You always felt that there was machinations or storyline going on that you didn't see. When the episode was over and you were waiting for the next episode, you always had the impression that there was more going on than really what you were seeing. Examples being Tim's Ranger walking around the jungle, you know.
Things that are going on behind the scenes, like maybe they didn't want you to say that.
Wow. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Somebody changes packets on that one.
Wow. Shadow interference.
Yeah. Somebody just disappeared him. He's not even grade 17 at this point.
No, but he brings up a good point. Even beyond some of the obvious things, like in not Voices of Authority, Matters of Honor, where we see the report going back to Earth Dome from Mr. Ndawe, and then of course the Psi-Corps representative shows up after this is Keffer's Star Fury gun footage, where he sees the shadow vessel for the first time, and there's that sort of backroom kibitzing with a member of EarthGov and Psi-Corps and all the rest, talking about how and I guess Nightwatch, how they can use this particular information to help accelerate the program back home. But even beyond that, I agree. There always seemed to be something, you know, even in the first season when Sinclair is having to deal with his representatives and or contacts in EarthGov, you know, they're always talking about the budget. They're always talking about public perception. So, you know, other things are going on. So, he's right.
Well, yeah, I mean, even more subtle things like Morden coming back from a trip to see someone. You don't know who, they don't really talk about it, but you see him coming back to Babylon 5. Obviously, he was going somewhere and it wasn't Zaha Doom. You know, we see him show up on, you know, actually at on Earth itself at some point, and I don't doubt that he's on other worlds as well, drumming up shadow influences. Even when the Civil War started with General Haig, Babylon 5 got a radio message that, you know, a ship was coming. You know, it had already happened. It hadn't instigated on Babylon 5. It wasn't the center of the universe. It was just a corner somewhere.
Yeah, right, right.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one I also like is Bester coming in Dust to Dust, and he's talking about Sheridan says, I hold you personally responsible for what happened with Talia Winters, and Bester's initial response is, well, that program was instigated by my predecessors at the Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't doubt him for a second. I don't think he's making that up or trying to dodge it. It's like, that's just one of many things that they've been up to.
Right, I agree. Yeah.
So, all right, Mike.
Hi, Al. This is Colin from San Marcos. I just want to say that surprises in Babylon 5 was a genius topic for the show, and it's one that any fan can easily comment on. What surprised me most about Babylon 5 was that it was an actual military science fiction show that featured a military that seemed plausible it could work in real life. For example, I find it implausible to turn over command of the Starship Enterprise to AWOL Cadet Kirk when there are hundreds of qualified, superior, and damn it all, commissioned officers already on the ship. But this is the substance that most military sci-fi shows are made of. In real life, you don't give a battle star to your idiot son, and when a little kid climbs into a Gundam, you firmly ask him to get the hell out. But I never saw that on Babylon 5. Sheridan and Sinclair were plausible officers and leaders. I appreciated that as an 11-year-old back in 1994, and even more so now as a Navy veteran. Unfortunately, the J.J. Abrams, hey, you, want to be a general? Mentality is preferred by the masses, so I'll sit here and see by myself. Anyway, great show, guys. Thanks.
Well, thanks, Colin. Appreciate that. First, thanks for your service to our country.
Mm-hmm.
That is appreciated. And I love hearing that kind of comment from people who know. One of the things I learned early on doing the podcast is I talk about something and I'd go, oh, that couldn't happen. Like I know at one point we're talking about the flyby of the White Stars over Earth Dome when the when Sheridan resigns from Earth Force and announces the formation of the Interstellar Alliance, the building shakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, well, that's kind of silly. I don't think that would happen. And then the next week we got a call in from someone who lived near an airbase. I got flyovers by F-16.
All the time.
Yeah, right. And it's like, guess what?
Well, that happens.
Right, exactly. So when, you know, Colin calls in to say, hey, it's a believable military, yeah, that's good to know. That's good information.
Yeah, I would say it's mostly believable. I think there are other shows that did it better. I will agree that you don't – well, hold on. I will agree you don't hand over the keys to a Battlestar to your idiot son. I don't think Leah Dama was an idiot. you know, this is not the Battlestar Galactica show, and I don't want to make it that. But I will go toe to toe on that one. But I would say it was mostly believable from that perspective. As somebody who grew up in a military household, yeah. there are other shows out there that did not do that so well, and B5 did.
What is your take on, Brett, since you grew up in a military household, the rank system? I mean, what do you take away from that?
What do you mean?
Well, there was a curious amalgamation of
rankings. How some people were generals and admirals, and they were,
and some were majors and colonels and captains, and I guess there weren't any commodores, but there was kind of it seemed to be kind of a mix of wet navy and land army.
Yeah, and that's actually I think that is something that happens in a lot of science fiction shows, because that's really the question. I remember specifically B5 had this issue. There was another show that I used to watch way back in the day called Space Above and Beyond, that had the same kind of issue, right? Where if you're in outer space, does that mean it's kind of like you're on the ocean and then you're in the Navy? you know, or what branch are you really? You know, and because each branch of the military has their own different ranking, some similar rank names, but their order may be slightly different. I'm really thinking of, like, you know, there's no ensigns in any other thing besides Navy. But there are lieutenants in all branches. I looked at it like this, at this way. I didn't get too nitpicky on that, because that wasn't the crux of the story to me. Sure. I didn't give a hoot, to be quite honest with you. When you asked what was my take on it, I wasn't watching it for its military accuracy, because quite honestly, whereas I will agree there wasn't the grab the nearest guy with the blue shirt and throw him to be the captain, because you're going to go down, beam down to the planet. You know, there wasn't that kind of stuff going on in B5, but there were things that, from a military aspect, I think were rather implausible. just my take. But I let it go because it was the that universe and it was okay with me.
Okay.
Well, you know, for me, it was kind of consistent until they reached Lockley being a colonel. You know, everyone who was wearing the blue Earth Force uniforms that we typically saw in Babylon 5, it seemed like they pretty much followed the naval tradition. There was Colonel Ben Zane, but he had that different color uniform on.
It was that as all well kind of.
Yeah, as well as when they had Gropos, Steven's father had a different color uniform on as well. So I always associated that with ground forces, so that sort of made sense to me. But then when in Lost Tales, when she was colonel, the whole system broke apart for me.
Well, you know, that didn't bother me. I'm curious as to know whether or not the thought was not Navy but Air Force.
Hmm.
And then at that point, you do have colonels.
Hmm. It's true. It's true. I honestly, I didn't.
But then you also have admirals, and they were wearing the blue uniforms.
So. Correct. Yeah. That was the problem. Right? Yeah. Very rarely, I truly believe more than anything else that has a lot to do with whatever the costume department had. Right. I mean, that's really what it had.
That could be. I mean, we had General Haig, and he was in the. Oh, now I'm gonna have to go back and look.
Right, because that's the thing, right? You're gonna look at it and sit there and say, okay. Then you're say general. So does that mean you're a Marine Corps general, or were you an Army general? You know, what kind of general were you? Right. It'll melt your head. So that's why I say I didn't get too stuck on it because it didn't make sense, and it wasn't a military show. That's the best way I can look at it. So I didn't care about its military accuracy because it wasn't a military show.
Right.
Well, that was like much of Babylon 5. It was never a insert the blank show. It wasn't, you know, a comedy. It wasn't necessarily a drama. It wasn't a military show. It wasn't a hard science fiction show. He introduced material just as it was needed to further the story, and he didn't dwell on it much past that. That's how we avoided, techno babble and things of that nature.
Right. And it was internally consistent. That way, and there very, very rarely were things introduced as plot devices simply to push a story along, and if it was generally not anything that was what's the word I want? It had a great impact on the overall epic that was being unwound.
You know? Well, in general, that's the benefit we have of JMS writing so much, that there was an internal consistency that no other show could enjoy because they wouldn't have the consistency of writing of the person writing it that did. So that, that's solely, I think, a benefit because there's usually models in most other things.
Yes and no. But one of the things we're going to bring up the straw horse of Star Trek. One of the things I do remember reading, reading between the lines, you go through like the encyclopedia written by Okuda and Sternbach, and they would insert little comments of their own, about whatever entry. And kind of the sense you get is that, while they talk to those guys to look for them for some sort of internal consistency in the Star Trek universe that everything would work, if the writer wanted to tell a story, he was going to do whatever he wanted. And if it meant that it was okay to put people through the transporter beam and turn them into children, then it was okay to do that. And never mind that that's like running someone over with a Mack truck and they're going to become a cat when the car goes by.
I liked Rascals. I don't know what you mean.
Oh, God. Worse than Spock's brain. Anyways, all right, Mike.
That was
we're
a bad episode.
Next one, please.
Hello, this is Father Beast from Sandy, Utah. Having heard Tim hearing my name, wondering if I'm a priest, I have to answer: yes, I am a priest. I'm the kind of priest that holds a day job and has a family. But yes, I am a priest. So, and no, that's not how I came to be called Father Beast. But there it is.
Actually, I think it was me who asked that, wasn't it?
I think it might have been, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I had made some kind of a semi lewd remark, and then the next voicemail was his, and I'm like, oh God, there's a priest listening to this. I'm going to hell for sure.
Yeah, I thought Jeffrey got rid of all the clergy seasons ago.
Yeah, no, right?
Apparently not.
Yeah. Thank goodness. That's good.
So, yeah, I appreciate his strong stomach. It's all I can tell you.
coming this September from Fox, Father Beast, the B5 Priest.
Nice.
Hey, Badcasters, it's John from Jersey. I was just listening to the episode on Law and Justice in the Babylon 5 universe, and there was the voicemail talking about the Lem breaking the Great Council. And one thing that I don't remember you guys mentioning is that Delenn used to be a member of the Great Council. And not only that, but there were members of the Great Council at the end of the first season that agreed with her going ahead with her part of the prophecy, at least as she had envisioned it or understood it. So when it came down to the moment of breaking the council, there were members of the religious caste and the worker caste who were already favorable to Delenn and to some degree and would have listened to what she had to say because they remember her being the chosen of Dukat and all of that. More than that, the members of the warrior caste, which had taken four slots rather than their usual three, would have also had a great deal of influence and would have been arrogantly thinking, we don't care if Delenn takes away the religious caste out of the Great Council and breaks the council because we want to take control of everything anyway. So I think that it was pretty well established over the first few years of the show that that moment had been building pretty much since the death of Dukat and even after that when Delenn decided to go ahead with the prophecy. Talk to you later. Bye.
Well, John, I guess maybe we didn't mention that Delenn was a member or a prior member of the Grey Council because...
I thought you did. I've been catching up since I've been out of touch for a few weeks. And no, you did mention that she had been a member of the council because I think it was Brett who was wondering, like, under what authority she broke the council, if I recall the conversation.
It could have been me. I was drinking.
No, but John's point is a good one. I just actually before the show started went back to watch those specific scenes out of Babylon Squared where Delenn is nominated to take over leadership of the Grey Council, but that would require her to give up her role as ambassador / Sinclair Watcher on B5. And, she refuses because of prophecy and talks about his great moving speech, in fact, about how the humans are better than they know and nobler than they think and and on and on. But they vote, and, of course, they tell her it's sort of an all or nothing kind of thing. It's like, Delenn, either you accept this position on the council or we're giving you the boot. And they vote, and all the lights go out except for two or three, and that's it. And I'm guessing a lot of that went along the lines of party lines, if you will. But then at the end of the episode, I can't remember the character's name. He's the nominative leader of the Grey Council. He's the one holding the staff. He gives Delenn a triluminary, and basically. Tells her, you may not be part of the Grey Council, but if you're right, you can use this more than we can. So here you go. And then, of course, when she goes back to break the Grey Council, it's more of a, coming in and kicking things over and saying, okay, it's,
A cult of personality in some sense.
Yeah, or certainly the force of her own charisma to get in there. Now, what's interesting is, it occurred to me listening to that, that in that original outline thing that we were talking about in the White Might Have Beens that, proposed basically 2 5-year series, Babylon 5 and Babylon Prime, in that treatment or concept, it is the warrior caste who basically perform, they commit a coup d'etat, and the Grey Council's on the run. And we kind of see that happening with, or at least the seeds of that being sown with the fourth spot going to the warrior caste.
Right.
When they're taking that spot.
No, I remember that, you're right.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie, listening to the Surprises show on episode 206.
And I think the biggest surprise for me was, even though I enjoyed season one a lot, the seeing it the first time around, just how much better it was the second time around, even just after seeing most of it, just the only just the first season, and then after seeing the second season, seeing the first season third time, just how much better it was upon seeing more episodes and seeing just how much foreshadowing was in that season. That's all.
Well, I definitely agree with him. As when you actually go back to look at season one, the season that everybody says skip it and go right to two, but if you watch through season one after you've watched the whole show, JMS puts so many little pieces of information that carry either from the first episode to the last episode, and a whole bunch of things in between. You know, that just it's such a amazing planning on his part for these things that could potentially never come to fruit, that he does take the time to write in and film.
I still vote skip the first season. I really do. Don't listen to me, guys, because I'm jaded and bitter.
Jaded and bitter?
I'm sorry. I didn't like the first season. I didn't. I think that really it found its footing when Bruce Boxleitner showed up.
I agree with that.
From the tidbits perspective. Okay, now if I want to sit there and just break it down to the tidbits perspective, were there tidbits thrown in there? Yes, there were tidbits.
Well, no. I think there's easily six. Crucial episodes that you need to see to really not only understand some of the stuff that comes later on, but also to get the tone of the universe that you're going to immerse yourself in. And yeah, I mean, yes, you could go through and pick it out and say, okay, in episode six, scene three, a minute 30 in, listen for Kasha's line. But to me, that almost defeats the purpose. Part of what's so cool about it and what's so great about watching that show were the things that apparently seem to be throwaway lines or just, whatever. And then to have them come back around again and take on this whole other resonance. I mean, the very first episode of the show, Midnight on the Firing Line, there's the whole scene with Sinclair and Londo telling him about his dream, and as soon as I saw Jakar, I knew he was the one in my dream. In 20 years, we're going to be at each other's throats. And the whole episode is just basically, I mean, this is one of those you have to see. You get a sense of the basis of the Narn Centauri conflict. Okay, fine. Kosh says there are dying people. We should let them pass. Okay, fine. It's okay. What? Whatever that means. Well, that comes back around in Dust to Dust when Jakar has his vision. Is that there are dying people. We're a dying people. If we don't come together, we're all doomed. I mean, that's like, wow. And to have somebody tell you, okay, go back to episode one, scene two, this bit where Kosh says they are a dying race, we should let them pass. Okay, now go to blah. I mean, that's kind of – that takes away from the impact of it in my mind.
God, I hate when you make good points.
Man, I'm just glad when he makes them succinctly. That's
a... Hey, you can't have one or the other.
Well done.
All right, Mike, next.
Hey, this is Colin from San Marcos, Texas again. Hey, I'd also like to comment on another thing in episode 206. You guys were talking about how Glenn and Sinclair had different transformations and if that was possible, if that made sense. Now, what I've always thought was that since each of them initiated their transformation to fulfill a specific task, the lens being to bridge humanity and the Minbari and Sinclair to go back in time and become Christ with the crown of bones, they each would have geared the chrysalis towards the level of transformation that suited them best. Obviously, Glenn wouldn't have been so successful if she looked exactly like a human being, and if Sinclair had showed up with 5 o'clock shadow, he probably would have not been so successful as well. Both of them had access to someone with great machine expertise, and there was a variant of Kosh guiding them, so I think it's plausible that
the lens turned the knob to 3 and Sinclair cranked it to 11. Also, when you have a DNA transformation machine brought to you by from the ethereal on the time-traveling renegade space station, I think it's fair to assume that there might be a couple of unseen dials and knobs on the back. Again, great episode, guys.
I would like to know where the knob was. I want to. Who's the prop lady we talked to?
Oh yeah, Leslie Everton. Yeah.
I like to know where the knob was on that because I don't remember seeing that in the episode. But that is kind of funny.
This triluminary goes to 11.
I'm just reminded of that scene out of Back to the Future where he turns all the knobs up on the amplifier and just, you know, cranks the guitar one time. Yeah. You know, anyway.
Although one of the things he said that Kosh was guiding both of them, you know, since Sinclair basically knew how everything played out, especially having lived on Mimbar for over a year, he was probably doing more of the guiding, I think, from in the past than Kosh was.
Hard to say. I mean, because part of that time, Valen's on the run.
True, and I guess even when they were showing that one scene of the shadows, they said something about records lost or damaged or something like that. Mm-hmm. Len mentioned. So I guess maybe there weren't as complete. You know, he didn't know on like, you know, Thursday the 11th the shadows would attack this planet. So yeah,
right. And I think it's more a sense of the prophecy is less about control and more about the fact that Sinclair is basically historian before it all happens.
You know,
Delenn makes that point in Atonement. You know, now that Sinclair's gone, the prophecy has ended.
I'm going to throw out a really weird idea, and you guys can just shoot it down if you want to. But what if records weren't lost, but the records were purposely destroyed?
Well,
I wouldn't put it past the Vorlons. Yeah.
No, think about it, right? Because if you're Sinclair, right, who comes from, you know, hundreds of years in the future, you know the events that are going to happen. And the last thing you want to make sure of, or the one thing you want to make sure of, is that you don't sit there and interrupt the timeline by somehow polluting it yourself more than what you've already done by going back.
Oh, God, the paradox. Yeah, I mean,
because the temporal paradox there would be, like, you know, huge. And, like, space-time just collapses and we're all just go out in a big ball of fire.
But even more to that point. Sorry, go ahead. You finish.
I'm wondering, when I think about that, you know, the Mitbari obviously are thousands of years old, you know, as a spacefaring race. The odds that their records just, you know, got destroyed, these records got destroyed, I honestly wonder if that was a little more purposeful.
That's, you know, and because here's the other part of it, and this is the bigger part of it. Oh, God, Brent, you might be onto something. Here's the, because for Sinclair to fulfill that destiny, part of what has to happen is the Earth-Mimbari War.
Yes.
Okay. And part of the reason that war has to happen is that the Mimbari don't know about the humans. I mean, that's explicitly stated in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That as that Earth Force Task Force Janikowski's leading comes up, well, who are these people? And Delenn says, I think those might be the humans.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, wow, you might be onto something.
I'm just curious now at this point. I mean, really, I am.
All right, now we have another thing for Joe to write to flesh out on the.
That's right. That's on the right. Show.
Hello, Babylon Podcast. This is Father Beast from Sandy, Utah. You're talking about the surprises you experienced while watching the television show. I want to talk a little bit about mine. I remember the first time I was watching the show, I got more and more surprised by just how much I was dragged into the show. Babylon 5 did to me what no other science fiction show, at least, had ever tried to do before. That is, completely hook me like it was a soap opera, which, you know, I called it on occasion. It worked me over emotionally so much that I pretty much gave up on watching TV after that, because I knew it wasn't going to be Babylon 5.
Yeah, I can tell you for one thing, I gave up on Deep Space Nine because it wasn't Babylon 5.
I still think you should go back and watch the last four seasons of that show.
I truly think
the guys over at Paramount sat there and looked at what the guys over at the B5 Studios were cranking out and said, oops, we probably need to do something more like this.
Well, and that's why I stopped watching, actually, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, true. I understand what you mean, trust me.
Sorry, go ahead.
Once the war started, it seemed too much in parallel to me. I'd rather watch the superior show.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. As a hardcore Trekker, I almost want to sit there and say we should do a smackdown on that one. Because I don't know that I can call it a superior show. Over the last four seasons of DS9, I think that they were both equally good. I think that they had their own mythos, and what I liked about DS9 was it showed you a side of the Star Trek universe you didn't get to see. At least before that day, or before that show.
Standing on its own, I agree with you. But if you're just comparing the two shows tit for tat, other than obviously a more expensive special effects budget, I question a lot of the rest of it.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. We'll have to watch
it and like it too, but when you're comparing one to the other, I don't think it matches up. Other than I said, superior special effects. Budgets.
Okay. All right. We'll table that for another day.
Yeah, we will definitely have to table that for another day.
I'll open this flame war anytime you want, buddy.
All right. We'll have that one. To Father Beast's other point, though, about the emotional aspects of it, I completely agree with that. I think there were plenty of times where I was laughing because it was just, I couldn't believe it. And I'm thinking of Garibaldi and his second favorite thing in the universe.
Right.
Which was just a lot of fun. I have a very vivid memory of my mother coming to visit, and she happened to sit down in the room with us when we were watching B5, and it was Messages from Earth, and where Dr. Kirkish is talking about what she saw on Mars. And when the shadow vessel came down out of the sky to pull the other shadow vessel up out of the ground, we were sitting there going, except my mom, who had never watched the show, she goes, what's going on? It's like,
I can't tell
you in 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's funny how you say that, right? Because every once in a while I'll throw on the Babylon 5, and my 8-year-old son will ask, Dad, what's going on? And I'm like, it'll take too long. Yeah, it'll just take way too long. I think I've said before, Gropos was the first episode I ever watched, and I saw it in passing, and it instantly grabbed me, and I sat down, and I never stopped watching since.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really well done from that perspective.
Well, this is Neil from Bowie calling in again about the show 206 with the surprises. Another big surprise, which wasn't to do with the show itself, was the community that was built because of the show, because Joe posting online so much material that you could be communicating with all these people all over the place about Babylon 5, watching the shows, again, using the Lurker's Guide information, all this other information that people have been pulling out and that Joe put online, and then, of course, getting together with other fans. We had a DC B5 fan club for a while where we got people together and watched the end of, I think it was the end of season 3, the last four episodes of that somebody had brought over. And of course, and another big thing, watching Messages from Earth on a big screen, projection screen, somebody invited people in the area. There were about 50 people who came, and Joe called in on that, and we talked to him over the phone. So the big community that was built around Babylon 5, that was another big surprise.
from the series. That's all.
He said something I completely forgot about. And now that I think about it, it is kind of surprising even to this day that the creator and head writer of the show was also somebody who posted on the internet and interacted with fans in as real time as you could back then via the news groups that he was active in. And that was, even to this day, I can't think of a show that's done where you had that level of the production staff that close to the fans. Does that make sense?
Yes,
it does. And part of what JMS said from the very beginning was he did actually want to document sort of the growth and involving the show itself, and that he wanted to have, you know, a firsthand account from the inside as well as with fans as the show progressed, so there'd be that type of detailed record so people could go back and better understand things. And he talks about it more in the script books as well, that it was his plan all along that he wanted this to be fleshed out so people could see what's involved both from a creative and a practical standpoint to make a science fiction show.
And I would also point out that Joe himself has said that he is, as much as anything else, a fan himself. And what Babylon 5 was, in part, was the kind of show that he, as a fan, would like to have seen. And I think that level of contact was as much just a fan reaching out to other fans.
But it's still completely surprising that happened, really, to me.
Oh, yeah.
Unheard of. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, well, that's it for the voicemail for this week, but that's not it for all the voicemail we've got. I promise you, Gary. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and we're going to come back with just a couple of emails and wrap it up.
Irish drinking songs, Scottish bagpipes, tonally trad jigs and reels, Celtic rock. If it's independent Celtic music, you can find it on Mark Gunn's Irish and Celtic Music Podcast at CelticMusicPodcast.com.
Okay, jumping back in with a couple of emails. Now, this is the Babylon Squared portion of our, or maybe War Without End portion of our show, because the two emails I've got here, I don't think these people are going to hear until sometime down in the future. So let me read them, and you'll see why I say that. The first one comes to us from Justin Roy. He writes, "Dear Babylon 5 Podcast, hey guys, my name is Justin. I am just writing to tell you of my recent Babylon 5 experience. I was only recently introduced to the show when I bought my father the first 3 seasons of the show as a Father's Day gift. It was something of a gamble because neither my father nor I had ever seen it I'd seen it myself. I had only heard that it was a good sci-fi show, and we both love sci-fi. I must say it was a great gift. I went out and bought the last 2 seasons when we finished the 3rd. I've become thoroughly hooked on the show. I just wanted to share my experience and encourage you by the fact that there are still B5 fans being born. I look forward to listening to your podcast when I'm done with the series. I don't want any spoilers till then. Have a great day." So, Justin, whenever it is that you finish getting through the series and getting through the podcast, thank you for your email.
You know, I am so jealous of people finding it for the first time. I remember, you know, as you watched it for the first time and you figured out some of the connections and you just enjoyed the story and it just sort of washed over you, that feeling that you felt to experience such, you know, such a fine piece of writing, and to be able to experience it again, it's one of those things it can only happen to you once, but it's so nice that it does, and you almost wish it could, you know, happen again for the first time, even though it can't.
Right.
So here's something interesting. You know, I think either this summer or last summer, I'm not sure which one. They all blend when you drink as much as I do. I was watching B5 and my son was there, my oldest. He's 11. And he was watching it with me and he said, "Dad, this show looks dumb." and I said, why is that? He said, he said the graphics is what he called them. The graphics aren't that good. I said, you're not really watching it for that. I said, and back when this show first came out, it was pretty high tech. You know, but for him, his first exposure to that wasn't the story. And I feel kind of bad about that. Like, I wished I had waited a little longer to expose him to it so that he would have been drawn in by the plot and not so much by the explosions.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably my single largest regret regarding my kids in B5 is that I think I tried to get him in there too soon.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and that is sort of a sad fact that the most obvious and frankly, in the end, probably the most superficial aspect of any science fiction production, the special effects, are obviously the things that people first respond to in general. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying.
Yep.
All right, next one. This comes to us from Jan from the Czech Republic, spelled J-A-N, and I think it actually had a weird doodly bop over the A. So Jan, if that's how it's pronounced correctly or incorrectly, you won't know it for a while either, because he writes, "Hi guys, I just want to say I love your show and really appreciate the time and energy that every single person gives in this show. I have started to listen to the Babylon 5 podcast when show 100 just aired, and I've just listened to show 153. Great show, great deep geeking, great interviews, great Jeffrey. Thank you all. Keep up your great show and see you on the other side of the gate."
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah. That is nice, but I hope he goes back and listens to some of the first 99. There's some great episodes in there, some interviews that, you know, I think Snackman was before 100. Mm-hmm. Who else was before? Claudia was before 100. And
Peter Jurczyk.
Robin Akin-Downs. Oh, jeez.
If you could call Rock that man. An interview.
But see, there's some really funny bits.
Yeah, the problem with those interviews, though, is the most superficial thing is what people respond to most, and that's my audio quality coming through the landline. So.
Gotcha. And just so you know, I believe that little thing over the letter is called an umlaut.
No, it was not umlauts. It's not the dots.
It wasn't the dots?
Yeah, it wasn't the dots. It's not the heavy metal look that Jan was sporting here. So.
Then I got nothing.
Yeah, I don't. It was on the email, and then when I copied and pasted it, it disappeared. So, anyways. Gotcha. So, there we go. So thanks to those two people who wrote in and of course other emailers. We're going to get to those as time goes on. So thanks for listening to this Babylon podcast. Thanks, of course, to Mike Menengay for his behind-the-scenes efforts, unless you're watching the video feed, which it's not behind the scenes. He's right there. He's the only one moving, in fact. You can check us out on BabylonPodcast.com. That's our website. In fact, I posted up something Neil from Bowie had sent in a bit about surprises. He found an old site about ranger sightings.
I saw that. It was really cool. I was skimming through it. I just didn't have my DVDs to go check it, but it looks good.
Yeah, so check that out. That's at BabylonPodcast.com. You can get into the Babylon Podcast forums through wherever. Gary, you're more on that than I am.
www.farpointforums.com, and then look for the Babylon Podcast thread. 83x9x12 is still going. It hasn't stopped. It's been going for years now. It's a funny little thing
to catch up on. Yeah, and there's nothing happening there. Okay, whatever you do when you go to post there, nothing's happened there.
Nothing happened there.
Of course, you can send that email to thebabylonpodcast@gmail.com. And we'll respond to you within a month or so, I promise that, and maybe even read them here. And, of course, if you want to get into the Feedback Palooza, keep up with the dialogue, like Gary did.
Oh, then you can do this from my favorite way to reach the Babylon Podcast, through the voicemail line. That's
and what is that number?
That number is 206-338-2259. Once again, 206-338-2259.
That's the year that Gary got the number right because I wasn't going to.
Yes.
Very
and
nice.
Of course, summer will see us all on the other side of the gate.